Sheila was here.
Okay. We're opening the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Human Services. It is Tuesday, March 18, 2003. Today is public hearing on House Bill 5030, Department of Human Services, Community Human Services. And if there's anyone in the audience who has a cell phone, please turn it off so that it won't interrupt the proceedings. Rosie is present today to collect all those dollars from all the acronyms that you're going to say today. And the proceeds, of course, at the end of session will go to the Oregon Food Bank. And today, I understand we're going to have budget detail. Is that correct? Okay. So welcome.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Shelley Jones. I'm the Budget Administrator for Community Human Services. I think I'll pay Rosie in advance.
Rosie likes that.
In honor of Rosie, I also wore my When Pigs Fly pendants. I'm going to present to you in a little bit more detail than what the legislative fiscal analyst and the budget management analyst presented in the development of the 0305 budget for CHS. If you could follow along on page 2-25.
Which notebook?
The
white probably this
the white notebook.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I haven't got
it.
Where is yours?
It's upstairs. Past the second, the first green tab, I guess. Is it green? Mine's red.
Past the green tab.
Past the green tab. Page 2-25.
Interim audit reports.
Excuse me?
I'm on page 2-25. It's headed interim audit reports.
2-25, no. Governor's balanced budget.
Oh, 2-25.
Past the green tab.
I don't.
Okay. Second part in the community human service section.
Okay.
We have
2-25.
Yes.
Governor's balanced budget.
All right.
There we go.
At the top of that page, we begin with a base budget, and the base budget is the beginning of your building block for building your budget. It is the 0103 legislatively approved budget as of the April 2002 emergency board, with personal services adjusted. If I get into too much detail, just let me know. Three adjustments are applied to your base budget. For your personal services, one, the first adjustment is any step increases planned for employees in 0103, any distributed cost of living adjustment, and any step increases in 0305. Once your base is adjusted, you apply what's called your essential packages, and those are packages 010. We call them 010. That's kind of an acronym. 010, 020, 030, 040, and 050. I don't know how much detail you want to go into the packages, the essential packages.
Well, you keep going. And we'll tell you if you've given us too much.
Okay. Package 010 is your non-PICS, personal services adjustment. And PICS is your position information control system. So this adjustment is an inflation adjustment on costs that are associated with the employees for temporary employees, overtime, language and shift differentials, and also mass transit.
This is the adjustment it's in all of the governor's budget?
Yes. All of these essential packages are built into the various agencies' budgets. Senator Carter had a question on providing the details behind the old 1-0 roll-up, and we're still working on providing those details, and we'll provide those to you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, part, as explained on page 2-26, part of the roll-up in the 010 package that would perhaps be unexpected in some other budgets is as a result of the language differentials that are paid to staff members. And so that's a significant part of that roll-up. And as Shelley said, they'll get more detail on that, but I did want to note that is something that you perhaps wouldn't see in some of the other budgets to the extent that you do here.
Essential package 020 are what's known as called your phase-ins or phase-outs, and this is an adjustment for programs that are either have been phased in over this biennium or will be phased out. Package 030 is the inflation and price list adjustment that adjusts for state government surcharges passed through by the Department of Administrative Services and also Secretary of State audits. That's also where your inflation is calculated, and this is the package that was removed in the governor's balanced budget. Package 040 is mandated caseload. Mandated caseloads are programs that many of you might know as entitlement programs. If the client is eligible, then the client is entitled to the service. The mandated caseload package in the 0305 includes the food stamp program, the Oregon Health Plan program, the child welfare programs, and the senior and programs in the Seniors and People with Disabilities Program Office. Package 050, and I'm on page 2-29 right now. Package 050 is what's called a fund shift, and that's basically any general fund that's needed to replace federal funds that are capped. And some of the capped programs are temporary assistance to needy families is a capped program, Child Care Development Fund is a capped program, and Social Services Block Grant is a capped program. Any questions?
No, don't see any.
The next series of adjustments are adjustments to achieve the governor's recommended budget. And many of these are events that occurred between the development of the budget and the final submission of the draft budget. So package 010 was the outcome of the third special session. Package 083 was the outcome of the October Emergency Board. Package 084 was the November 2002 Emergency Board. Package 091 was the fifth special session. And package 092 are any additional adjustments needed to achieve the governor's recommended budget. Sheila Baker prepared a response. Did you pass that out?
I will.
There was a question at one of the previous hearings about the beginning positions at the beginning of the budget development in April 2002 and the positions at the governor's recommended budget. So she's prepared a display that shows what the positions were at the base budget in April of 2002, and then those packages that I just discussed and their impacts.
Madam Chair, would you like me to
walk
through those?
Would you walk through
those?
Okay. Sheila.
This basically summarizes on one page the position actions that Shelley just covered in terms of building the governor's balanced budget. So you're starting with the base budget in April. It's showing mandated caseload growth there, broken down between the various program components, the third special session actions, the October emergency board, October emergency board approved positions related to expansion of under the Oregon Health Plan 2 waiver. Then the November emergency board reduced net FTE positions for those various elements there. And then the fifth special session actions, the House Bill 5100 reductions, had a position impact in 0305, which reduced FTE again. And then the governor's budget partially added back positions that were associated with the child welfare system of care. Now, the moral of the story, if you will, is that this is what is in the governor's budget. We will be looking at these various elements as the department reshoots its 0305 budget preparatory to our work session on it. And so we'll be looking at, you know, what's the current status of all of these programs. For example, in Package 091, did the actions in Senate Bill 5548 adjust some of those actions, or are there adjustments needed for some of those actions? We'll obviously be looking at the other adjustments the governor's budget made in relative to the system of care positions. And so this is a summary of where the governor's budget is. It is, I am sure, not a summary of where the final legislative adopted budget will end up for this program area.
Any questions? Representative
Gates. Madam Chair, I just want to ask some of this really hugely macro questions that the public keeps asking, and I don't have a good answer for sometimes. At the end of the last legislative assembly with our legislative adopted budget, how many actual bodies do we have working, full-time equivalent, not just positions, but actual people working for the department at that time? Do you have a number for that? And I'd like to know the number we actually have of people working now.
I don't have that number with me, but I would be glad to get you that number.
And the other question I'd ask, if COLAs and STEPs were frozen for the next biennium, how many positions could we maintain? If you understand my reasoning there, if everyone agrees to a freeze, what do we buy back with that? How many positions do we save? Knowing that what you're trying to do is deal with a population that is going through recession and the needs of the public have actually increased while your resources have decreased.
Yeah.
But I want to see the change in actual number of people working, and what can you buy back if you really everyone steps up and agrees to a freeze?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, we'll get you those numbers.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Westler.
Yes. To clarify in my own mind, I kept hearing phrases come out of Representative Bates' mouth like, how many bodies do you have working, and then how many full-time equivalents do you have? So those are two different numbers, and I just want to make sure the agency is clear in what you want.
There are three questions involved in that. There are positions that are held open. I'm not interested in that. What I'm interested in is an FTE for most people is part-time positions or full-time positions, but you make them an FTE so you can manage to look at and know what you're talking about. So if you think of FTEs, full-time equivalents, as actual people, that's what I'm looking for. Knowing that some people may be part-time, some people are full-time, then I want that number in comparison to where we were to where we are now. Does that make it clear?
That makes it clear to me.
Thank you.
He wants to know how many bodies are actually in the agency. Okay.
That's a different answer.
That's a little bit different again. FTEs truly represent people. That's fine with me. Knowing that some are part-time, some are full-time. FTE is a good tool if used properly. But not positions.
Full-time equivalent.
Right, full-time, but not positions, people. people from the point of view of the part-time or full-time, and FTE is a good tool for that.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, if when we're working on this we're not clear, I'll be sure to call your office and get some clarity.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair?
I think another question he probably wants to also know is how many vacancies do you have?
Exactly. I'm sure in that inquiring mind wants to know.
Yeah. This inquiring mind, yes.
Let me next
was that the question you were going to ask, yep. Representative Wesley? I just kind of got in your head and I knew that that's what was coming out. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, that concludes my portion of the presentation today, unless you have any further questions.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you.
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Ramona Foley, Assistant Director with the Department of Human Services. And the last part of our agenda is a tab, Appendix 6. I think if you turn to that tab, you will see something similar to what you saw with children, adults, and families, but this is the prioritized list of services for the department, including Community Human Services and the Office of Vocational Rehabilitation Services. And what you see at the top of that chart is that as the work is done across the service priorities of all the clusters, that will also drive the priorities in the field. For example, if the state were to decide that we would no longer be doing adoption services, then all of the full-time equivalents in the field who work on adoption services, including those in central office, could be eliminated potentially, just as an example, not a hopeful thought, but as an example. So what we will be doing is, as you all consider those priorities, we'll be prepared to say how many full-time equivalents there are in each of those program areas. And you will also have that information from HELP and from seniors and people with disabilities over the next few weeks. And then if you look at the Office of Vocational Rehabilitation Services, these are the programs in a priority order, and these are the descriptions. I mean, these are programs that you have described in your book from the presentation yesterday that Tina Treasure did.
Okay. Any questions? Good. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes, I'm going to open it for public testimony. We had some individuals who are here who want to speak to some voc rehab issues. And I believe that Sheila had passed out a list in the back. Or sign up.
I'm not sure anyone had a chance to sign up.
Okay. So if you want to sign up, the list is in the back. Is she getting phone?
She's getting trouble. Yes.
I bet you could really poke it down there, Ramona.
I tried. I really tried.
It's probably full, Madam
That's
Chair.
That's what I'm wondering.
That's what we're hoping.
I'm hoping that. And that's
some. That would be nice. We would be ahead of that people getting in the government.
We just. There's a little. You have to
write a perception when you do that.
I'm hoping there's a little screen.
There's a different sense of what we're looking
at. No,
he's not full.
You
just need to be
Well, there we go. But don't lose this, what I'm going to give you. Okay? It'll work.
Hey, right, I owe Rosie $20 on the back of that thing.
I want that card back. Oh, it's gone, isn't it?
Ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching.
I think every committee member has an obligation to make a significant contribution to Rosie.
I think so.
Since you made that suggestion, it's first in line.
I'll do it. Right here.
Here comes the first test of faith.
Okay, whose picture's on that bill?
Andrew.
Andrew, oh, here's another one.
I tell you, these gentlemen are so generous. I just love them.
Now, these were the first. I gave it to you right there.
Oh, I was going to say.
Oh, I'll take that again.
That was actually me.
Rosie Benson, and the Sleepy State of Oregon, thanks to the picture those who wake up everywhere and they didn't have anything to eat. For those who don't know, I started the Oregon food chair. That was a stay-on business a lot of years ago.
So. How many years, Madam Chair?
When I was just a mere baby. Thank you.
Okay, we only have one person to sign that.
That's it.
Ed Johnston.
Good afternoon. My name is Edward Johnson from Lincoln County. And I'm one of those, I guess you would call, clients of the agency. Not by choice, because I was, twice I ended up on the job breaking my neck. Not because of my fault, because of related to the job. Anyhow, dealing with that, as I handed to me, this is a final order dealing with Department of Human Resources dealing with my disability case. I'm one of those people that are deliberately, and I guess to use the word deliberately, that falls through the cracks dealing with workman's comp in this. Workman's comp is denied my claim. I get to go fight them for about another year. This is standard procedure. 90% of all claims are denied in the state of Oregon. Dealing with human resources, it really frustrates me because they say how they help the public. Well, when you go for assistance, you're on the average denied because of probably your situation, or it could be politically motivated. That's hard to say. But it distraughts me because they're constantly here asking for increases in their budget or increases of what they were allegedly that they're saying they're helping the public. Well, I know I'm definitely not speaking alone. There are hundreds of people in this state going through this, not just myself, and I know that for a fact. I speak on behalf of at least 70 people just in Lincoln County on this particular instance. It really distracts me because they sit there and say that they're helping us. And then they say that, oh, well, this group of people are falling through the cracks over here, so we need to tighten up this law or we need more money for this. Well, the people like me falling through the cracks, we never see it. You know, every time we turn around, I always see how they get pay raises. I was told part of the reason why I didn't get my monthly check, basically, on DHS, because I wasn't, you know, deliberately asking for a handout. I've never done that. That's not my position. But I'm in a situation where I have no choice. I've exhausted some of my family and friends' resources. And anybody who's had a family member who's been disabled knows how that goes, and it's not deliberate. This is how they come up here and say, we need more money. And I'm so ticked off when I see pay raises, you know, substantial pay raises of administrators throughout the state, because we, the injured workers, and I'm going to use that term because I am an injured worker, we're the ones, not only do we pay for it in our taxes, our property taxes when we own homes, but then again, we don't get nothing in return. Well, this Friday, because of the state, I'm in the process of losing my home, my property and everything because of all this. My personal possessions, I have to sell to figure out how I'm going to live in my car. Then I live in my car, then I'm arrested for being a vagrant living in a car. Well, the state of Oregon has personally put me in this position. I'm not the only one who's been in this position. So it disturbs me when I sit up here and I see these people constantly coming up and say, well, we need more hours for people to work overtime. Well, you know, years ago when the state government, when I was involved in state government with my family and other associates years ago, average government employees used to get two-thirds of what the average working family got, and they got the benefit of full medical and dental and other stuff for their families to balance out that. Well, since the 80s and 90s, we have seen an overlap of all that where there's more going to the state employee than going to the public. Now, we really need to get a balance back. Because of that situation today, we are in a financial devastation that the state has overran. You know, now we're trying to catch it. You know, now we've got the tiger by the tail, but what are we going to do? Let him bite us back? Are we going to be able to train that, basically train that tiger? Now, I'm just so frustrated listening to all the stuff that I listened to. I was personally told basically part of the reason why some of the people in my position didn't get it because the administrators got their pay raises. They had to balance it out somewhere, so it had come from one part of the department. You know, as I sat there and gave you this, I mean, this evidence that I've given you, my neck's been broken twice. I have nerve damage. I lived 9 years with a dislodge in my spinal cord before I had my first surgery, which basically was killing me. I ended up with another disc lodged in my cord when I fell at work, and I lived 9.5 months with that lodged in my spinal cord. Believe me, that is one of the most excruciating pains, and I've been told it's 10 times the pain of giving childbirth. And it's just so frustrating that people in my situation are deliberately are the ones that fall through the crack. Not everybody. I was blessed today that people in my community gave me the money to get up here, or else I would not be able to be here. It wasn't for people in my community who believed in what I was doing, not only locally, but they know I'm not afraid to speak. Because a lot of people are so afraid to come up here and speak because they're terrified. Because they figure that they fall on deaf ears. Well, I'm too ignorant for that, or stubborn, or pain in the rear. I just don't worry about that. I speak my point of view. Most people know that. But when you consider their budgets, I really would like you to reconsider what at the people at the bottom end, that is me, what we're going through, when they come up here and testify that they're doing all this stuff for the disabled and all this stuff, they're really not. I mean, yes, unfortunately, I lost all my medical coverage from when I was fired at my job because I went to surgery, so I was fired for going to surgery for my job. I lost my medical coverage at work. So by being on Oregon Health Plan, it's not my choice, but I have no decision of it. But right now, I have to pay a copay or pay my monthly premiums. I don't have an income at all. You know, I wasn't put in this position. I was put in this position because I broke my neck on the job and because I'm still fighting workman's comp. So it's like one side of the system's over here, almost washing the other hands over here, because if they can keep it going and coming up here and say that they're doing, workman's comp was over here saying we're doing this for the workers, and then we got disabled people, DHS coming up here saying we're working for the disabled. You know, and then there's people like me deliberately set to fall through the cracks, in my opinion, because I'm living it. That's why I say that. But now I'm here sitting there going, well, what are we supposed to do?
Just ask you a question, since you mentioned that you had an on the job injury.
Yes.
And I don't know, because I would assume that you would somehow be involved with the workers' comp system, which is supposed
I'm still in.
To take precedence when there is a job-related injury. And and you're telling me that you're not?
I am. But most cases, at least 79% of all cases in the state of Oregon, denied first and second before it goes to court. It's mandatory denial.
Well, I don't know if, and maybe some of my colleagues do know, if there's any hearings in the building that's dealing with the workers' comp issue, because clearly if you're having problems with workers' comp and getting through that process, that really is where you need to function, I mean to
speak on that,
share with,
right,
with them on that. And I can check for you, you know, a little later to determine if we are hearing anything in this building with respect to workers' comp.
Yeah, Chair Winters, yes, and I am still working on that one.
It's Representative Westler.
Madam Chair, Jerry Crummell's general government, and at least I know on the House side, and I assume there are some on the Senate side as well, but I know Jerry Crummell's general government and Representative Close's business committees are both dealing with workers' comp issues.
Mm-hmm. What I would like to do is to, you know, get you hooked up with them to address those specific issues that you have with as it relates to workers' comp and some of those. So none of us want you to be falling through any cracks.
Well, I'm not disputing that, but it's just a frustrating situation.
Well, let's see what we can get you to some of the people who are working on those issues, and so that you're getting some avenue into that.
Okay.
And I do have your hearing paper that you gave us, and I will study that, and I think I have your card in my office, and
yeah.
I will get back to you on some of those. So, and I do thank you for coming, and like I said, I will try to work you through the system.
No problem. I appreciate that, but I just want to make sure that people see from all sides of how one would get the impression, even though it's not deliberately intention. But when we come to the impression, it's like almost that one side is doing to the other. And it's not, it's like subconsciously it's happening, but I don't believe it's intentional. But it's just one of those things of what is the best avenue to determine of the way that this doesn't happen. You know, and that's where I'm coming from to that point.
Well, thank you. And I don't know if there's anyone else who wants to sign up for Voc Rehab. Because that's really what we're supposed, what we're hearing today.
Well, yeah, and I could like to add one thing to Voc Rehab. When I went through that, the first stage, when I had my, when I was going through workman's comp when I was originally injured, I ended up going through vocational rehab, which I don't have qualms. They really worked really well with helping me out. I ended up having one of my vehicles repaired that the state ended up paying $800 for. The rear end fell apart. Because of a mechanical bad judgment of the way the mechanic worked. And when I went back to the agency, they said, well, tough, we can't do nothing about it. That frustrated me about taxpayers spending money on a vehicle when it wasn't properly maintained and fixed when it went into the shop, because I only got 50 miles when the rear end fell apart.
What was the shop, Voc Rehab shop?
Yep.
Or was it a private shop?
It was a Voc Rehab authorized shop. But that's the frustration that I think there are some of these things happening, and I think they need to be a little better looked at, because they said it costs more than trying to get their money. But then again, my attitude is, then if that's happening, you shouldn't go back to that shop. That's my only opinion on that.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Chair Winters.
Yes. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Winters. Just a quick question.
Yes, sir.
I'm interested in knowing, how were you treated by the frontline staff? Were they courteous? Were they polite? Or were they none of the above?
Well, it was more like I was a burden on them. You know, it was more that, you know, oh, here's another person that's coming in, oh, no, after for more assistance. It was mainly, it was like I was, felt like I was a burden. Then after I got all that hurdle, when I ended up talking to the administrator in my area, because they knew me from years previously when they were the head of vocational rehab in my county before they got terminated for that position and they had to go to another position, that partially I had some, I personally had some relations to her probably getting terminated 14 years ago, but we've worked over those differences now, so I right now I haven't had much problem here. Recently I do get, as of late, I've had very courteous service, but before that, it's one of those things. I don't know if it was politically involved, which I publicly should say that. So I can't speak totally on the opposition of that, because I did have some personal situations with the director in my county with previous years before.
Thank you.
If that makes sense. So
thanks.
It gets frustrating when you're an outspoken person.
Okay.
Thank you very kindly.
Yes, could you announce tomorrow?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, tomorrow you're scheduled to move away from DHS for a few days. You'll hear the Commission for the Blind budget tomorrow, and then the next day will be the Oregon Disabilities Commission. So Rick Olson will be here from our office, and you'll see a different set of faces doing the presentations.
Any further questions? Gosh, you guys are going to get a little reprieve today.
Yeah.
With that, we are adjourned until tomorrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.